Welcome to the Driving Your Marketing Podcast, where small business entrepreneurs come to discover the strategies, systems, and tools to kick their marketing into high gear. If you want to go from surviving small business owner to thriving entrepreneur, you're in the right place. Let's get ready to roll. All right, this is Eli Delaney with Driving Your Marketing, and we're here with another awesome interview. As always, Driving Your Marketing, the whole point behind what we do and where we come from is to help small business entrepreneurs, coaches, speakers, consultants, mom and pop businesses get all the best marketing tools that are out there to drive themselves to the next level without necessarily have to spend a lot of money on the big budget marketing stuff. And today I'm really excited. I've got Jim Signorelli as my guest interview. He and I had a great conversation last week, an amazing book. I am really excited about it called Story Branding. So, Jim, thank you very much and welcome to the call.
Thanks, Eli. Good to be here.
Yeah, so this is one of the things when you and I had the conversation last week, it really made a big difference for me on the concept of what story branding really is. And now, let's tell us a little bit about where, you know, how you got started. Give us a little bit of history about who you are. Talk about your company and some of the cool highlights about what's taking you from where you started to what story branding is and your company, ESW Story Lab.
Well, I wish I could tell you that the whole idea of story branding was an epiphany. But it was really came to me quite by accident. Actually, it was an unfortunate accident. You know, every business has its cliches, and the advertising business is no exception. Things like we've got to break through the clutter, or we need a 360-degree solution. We don't care about winning awards, et cetera. If you've ever been on the other side of an advertising pitch, you're familiar with them. But one day, a few years back, I was in a new business pitch throwing out my fair share of cliches, and one of them happened to be advertising is storytelling. And as cliches go, I've always thought it was a pretty good one, largely because nobody knows what you're talking about, and it also sounds pretty good. But as soon as I had said that, having gotten away with it before, this time I wasn't going to get away with it, a hand raised and someone in the audience asked me to explain what I meant. So I stumbled, of course, largely because I didn't know what I meant, and unfortunately, of course, we aren't doing work for that client today, but I promised myself that I would never be asked that question again. So I looked into, what's this advertising and storytelling all about? And lo and behold, among other things, I discovered it wasn't true, because not all advertising tells stories. Actually, it didn't take any genius to figure that out. Just go by a billboard that you have about 2 seconds to take in and tell me how that tells a story. And as far as TV, most advertising is anything but a story. Most ads, in my opinion, are like essays or editorials. Some are even like dissertations. So, however, and this is a big however, in my investigation, I found out that brands may not be able to tell stories through their advertising, but there are still a lot of principles they can borrow from stories and the things that make stories powerful. And that's really how story branding started about 5 years ago at my own agency, ESW, and we've been using it ever since. Now, I've worked at major agencies across the country. I've been in the business for about 30 years. I started out in Chicago, went to New York, then to L.A., then back to New York, then to Baltimore, and then finally to Chicago. And I was lucky enough to start my own business, which is now about a 45-person agency here in Chicago. And we've been recognized as an Inc. 5000 company for 3 years straight. And the Crane Chicago Business listed us, I think, as one of the top 25. And the reason I'm thinking is I think it came out about last month that we were one of the top 25 agencies in Chicago. So what am I missing? I'm trying to click through all the questions you asked about my background. I don't know if I covered it a little bit.
Oh, that's good. No, definitely. And I mean, it just goes to show, I like to kind of give people just a little bit of background about who our guests are and where they're really coming from. Because most of our audience are small mom and pop businesses, solopreneurs. A lot of times they're not even in a brick and mortar location, and they're getting out there trying to figure out, okay, how can I compete with the big boys? How can I get my word out there, get my message out there? A lot of them are passion driven. They've got a product or service that is there to change the world, but they're stuck when it comes to the marketing and advertising world. And that's where people get confused. And I one of the things I wanted to bring up, you're talking about your story, and I noticed in some of the notes that you had sent over to me, you were talking about how you've always been an advertising guy. And back in grade school, you had a little bit of a story about a show and tell. You know, that was your favorite class
I
in
sent
high
you those
school.
notes. I can't believe I sent you those notes.
You sent me that note, and I'm like, okay, that is not something that I'm going to leave out of this interview because this is just entertaining. So tell us that story a little bit, because that's going to kind of show people the mindset of where your ingenious comes from.
Either that, or they might want to hang up. I don't know, but yes, I've always been fascinated with advertising. I don't know why. I was always more interested in the ads when I was a kid than I was the programs. And I don't know, fourth, fifth grade, when kids are doing show and tell, I was the guy. While they were up there talking about some rock they found on the playground, or the first time they had a pony ride, or you name it, I'd get up and do these make-believe commercials, for things that I kind of wanted to have in my life, like, baseball bats that were guaranteed to help you hit home runs, and little sister repellent and stuff like that. And I guess I was pretty good at it because the kids were always looking forward to my show and tell, as opposed to, the kid who was going to talk about a stamp collection or something. I don't know, I got the bug, and I went to college. I studied advertising, believe it or not. I mean, not hard to believe now, but I've just been I'm a thoroughbred ad guy, I guess. I've, since a very young age, I had an interest in it, and one thing led to another, and here I am.
Very cool. Well, and in those notes, and you're missing one piece that I thought was really entertaining, was the paperboy story.
Oh,
You're
yes.
testing your copy. Now before we go into this, I want to talk about, for those of you listening, you got to pay attention to this, because I talk about split testing and that you've got to test everything you do. And Jim has the greatest story of split testing a marketing piece than anything I've ever seen. So Jim, tell us that story real quick.
Oh my gosh. Well, as a paper boy, I would do my own copy testing. Some houses would get a leaflet that would say, "If you buy from me, I promise not to throw your paper in the bushes." And that, in fact, outsold the other tested copy, which was, "You need the news, I need the money. Let's strike a deal." And they thought it was cute, and I ended up getting a lot of paper signed up. So.
And that's awesome. I mean, it's entrepreneurship, but it's split testing your marketing, finding out
I
what
guess,
is going to work. And that is awesome. As soon as I saw that piece, I'm like, okay, we got to talk about this, because, as a marketer, I'm always thinking in the world of marketing. So I'm thinking, okay, what can we do to split test this? Is this headline going to outdo that headline? Are we going to, change where our opt-in form is on our website and all that kind of goofy stuff that so many people don't even understand. They're like, no, we're just going to put it up there and let it sit. And I'm like, no, you've got to split test it. And this is a perfect story of, even as a kid, as a paper boy, you were split testing your marketing, which is I just thought that was awesome. We had to share that one. All right. So let's get back to story branding, because, I mean, the book is got some really amazing stuff. The name of it is Story Branding: Creating Standout Brands. And yeah, I can't talk today for some reason. That's because I just spent 3 days at InfusionCon and my brain is still fried.
That's okay.
From all the
information. It's a little bit of a tongue twister anyway. So
yeah, okay. Story branding: creating standout brands through the power of story. Where did you come up with starting to write that book?
Well, like I said, it was it came out of that experience I had and my investigation into stories. And you know, I started to really, it was like the bug that I couldn't get rid of. I just was fascinated with how powerful stories can be, and when you really dig deep into why they are as powerful as they are, I really saw a lot of parallels between, you know, what I'm trying to do as an advertiser and you know, what authors are doing when they're writing their stories. So, you know, I came upon Daniel Pink's book. I don't know if you're familiar with The Whole New Mind. And he was, you know, when I read this, it was sort of like, boy, this, I am in the right place, man. He writes that, well, the whole book is based on the premise that left brain thinking, our logical sequential side, is no longer as taxed as it used to be because computers have taken over a lot of left brain functions, and that, you know, success in the 21st century is going to be largely dependent on right brain functions, i.e. storytelling. And he went on to say that that's going to be one of the most important things that people and leadership and management in all aspects of business are going to have to learn more and more about. So I read that and I thought, man, I am really in the right place. So, man, I just kept digging and I went to storytelling seminars taught by Doug Lipman in Philadelphia and then Annette Simmons. And I connected with a guy by the name of Kendall Haven, who, for anyone interested in really digging deep into what stories are about, I highly recommend his work. It's called Storyproof. And in his book, he summarizes something like 300 studies that have been done on the effectiveness of stories. It's a mind blower, I think. It took him like 10 years to amass this information. It's a very simple read. It sounds like it's going to be an academic yank, but it is not. And it is, in fact, Kendall was kind enough to write the foreword to my book and sees what I'm doing as kind of the application to what he put forth as a theory. So with a lot of help and, you know, from a lot of people who I refer to often as the storyati, that's how it all came about.
Very cool. Now, Kendall's a former NASA scientist, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, that's kind of fun to get a NASA guy to write the foreword for your book. That's pretty cool.
Well, he started out as at NASA, he was a trainer. And, you know, he was trying to use storytelling as a training technique. His boss or somebody there said, you know, you can't do that. I mean, you can't tell stories to astronauts and help them to learn how to go into space. And he said, watch me, you know. So, you know, he did, and he was very successful. And he, too, then got the bug and decided, hey, you know, there really is a lot to this that a lot of people don't know. And he left NASA, and he applied a lot of his scientific rigor, I guess, to understanding stories from a scientific perspective, and really contributed a great deal to the literature on you know, what stories are, because stories are, you know, it's a fuzzy word. We use it all the time to describe jokes and songs and poems and you name it, but he really spent a lot of time defining what it is and showing how, in fact, it can be used in various aspects of teaching, selling, you name it, any form of communication where persuasion is, you know, is important.
Right. Well, and let's go into, you mentioned the word persuasion, so let's go into that a little bit, because I know it always amazes me when I'm speaking or when I'm doing coaching with some of our students. I'll talk about the fact that you've got to learn persuasion and influence. And the first thing they do is start thinking, I don't want to scam somebody. And like, no, it's not about scamming people. It's about just being honest, and you're pushing them in the direction of something that's going to help them. So kind of just talk about persuasion just a little bit and how storytelling goes into that as well.
Well, there's two forms of communication that come into play in persuasion. One is telling, and the other is sharing. You know, when you tell somebody something, you're reporting to them your information. you know, whether it be an opinion or a so-called fact. But oftentimes, that's where persuasion falls apart, because facts can be argued with, regardless of what the fact is. You know, there'll be somebody in your audience who'll go, that's not true, you know. And the sharing piece is really what story branding is all about. It's about what we call the big T truth. It's, you know, it's communicating a meaning that you have in some way, some implicit way, as opposed to an explicit way, some way that's in terms of, you know, that's communicated through the way you talk, you know, the examples you show, and your passion, what have you, you know, that is felt and shared with your audience. It's again, it's one of those right brain things. It's hard to articulate, but it's felt by your audience. And you know, that's really the aspect of persuasion that we get into, and it's one of the biggest lessons that one can take away from the principles of story, because story is not about telling. Of course, yes, they're telling you the plot, but no author starts out his story with, well, here's what I want you to know about my, you know, what I want you to learn from this story. They leave it up to you to decide what it is that you're going to take away from it. So this is more of a pull aspect of persuasion, as opposed to a push. If you know the if you can visualize the difference. Pushing is, you know, putting it out there, telling people what you want them to know, and instead of having them pull it from you, and you know what it is that your real intention is.
Right. Well, and that's where, you know, today's marketing, that's where it's going, is that, you know, in the old days, which wasn't even really that long ago, advertising went one direction. Marketing went one direction, which was, here's what I have to offer. Here's the products. Go buy it. Which,
right,
you know,
right.
You look at old style, you know, print advertising. A lot of print advertising was designed in that aspect, less storytelling, more just a here's how great. And if you even look at today's ads, unfortunately, so many businesses still think that way of,
right,
you know,
right.
We've been in business this many years and these are the products that we have and we have a guarantee, buy our stuff. Well,
exactly.
There's no connection
exactly.
There. And you look at like websites, and I've been in the web world since 96, I believe, 96 or 97. And when we first started building websites, it was a matter of, you know, here's who we are, here's the products and services we offer, here's the pricing, and here's how to contact us. It was all a one-way communication, and everything has changed so much, especially with the social world, to where it's got to be that two-way connection, and people are tired of the big corporate image. They want to have a connection with the people involved. People buy from who they know, like, and trust, and a lot of times bigger companies have forgotten about that. That's one of the major advantages that us as small industries have.
Right, right, right. I think that to your point, well, a couple things. One is I think that there is a lot of advertising that still is of the ilk that you described, where it's all telling and nothing else. And I want to make it clear that I'm not against telling, because I think there are certain things that need to be told, certain facts that need to be communicated. If you've got a new product or you've got a new location or some information that needs to be told, it, by all means, tell it. But don't stop there. You know, it's like I draw the analogy of painting a picture. You know, don't just paint the picture on the canvas without concerning yourself with the frame. You know, you've got to put that picture in a frame. There's got to be a context. There's got to be, you know, some relationship between who you are and why you are, why you exist, to what it is that you're informing or telling your customers about.
Awesome. So why do you think that this is the entrepreneur approach to branding?
Well, yes, it is very entrepreneurial in that I've worked with both entrepreneurs and with corporate marketing people, and I still do. And on the corporate side, you know, there's a great deal of dependence on what is often referred to, or what I learned to be called, the marketing concept. And the marketing concept is basically the idea that you first find out what the customers want, and then you give it to them. Build and they will come. You know, that kind of, well, it's not build what they and they will come. It's quite the opposite. It's find out what they want, then build it, and they will come.
Right.
Consequently, the consumer, in effect, owns the brand. With entrepreneurs, clearly, they too are interested in what the consumer thinks and feels. But ultimately, and most of the entrepreneurs I've worked with, they own the brand. And because of that, the brand is usually a reflection of their vision, their passion, their belief system, and nothing that is made up following a focus group. They don't go out and research, you know, whether this is a good idea necessarily. They know. And story branding requires putting the brand before all else. We have a phrase we use, talk about it in the book quite a bit. It's the idea that it's brand first. You know, we start with who we are and why we exist. And then we go out and find customers who we can align with, who are most inclined to share our values and beliefs. We might have to modify a little bit in order to expand the audience, to reach more people, but we never lose sight of what we're really all about. You know, the best example of that, I think, is the classic of Steve Jobs. I mean, when he came back on board with Apple, he basically said, you know, no, this is what we're going to do. I know what we need to do, and the computer needs to be more friendly. It needs to, we're not going to advertise. We've got more megabytes, or we're faster, or, you know, whatever. Our brand is going to be about us, and what we're about is being crazy enough to think we can change the world. And, you know, that really started what today is now, what, the biggest company in the world. But that was really, that was Steve Jobs' vision. And it's apparent in all the products that he oversaw. Hopefully it'll remain apparent, with his unfortunate departure. But, that's the kind of thing an entrepreneur drives. And that's, you know, we talk about story branding. We talk about, you know, that vision, that belief system that's driving the brand. And we get more of that from entrepreneurs. We're putting a lot more on the line, putting more skin in the game, if you will, than corporate people who are there for 18 months and gone, and who are mostly interested. And I shouldn't say they're all like this, because they're not. And I don't mean to indict that, you know, the corporate side of things, especially since many of them are my clients. But many are interested in shareholder value, increasing things, increasing sales, increasing profits, increasing shareholder value, etc. And secondarily, it becomes, okay, so, you know, what are we really all about? And the entrepreneurs kind of flip that and are more concerned with what we're all about. And the profits come as a result of their passion and how they go about doing their business.
Awesome. I love the way you said that, because that's one of the things that I am always telling people. It amazes me how many people go into a market for the whole purpose of, I can get rich here, and there's no passion, there's no love for it, and it's amazing when you see those people versus those of us that are very passion driven. It's amazing the energy that comes out of that, and the greatest thing about it is when you've got that passion driven purpose behind what you're doing, you end up also attracting the people that are the best clients for you, so you have more fun with your clients as well.
I saw a video that was of Guy Kawasaki from, he used to be the software guru for Apple. And he is now he runs an private equity firm. And he helps startup companies. And he said, you know, when they come to me, they all come to me with their plans about how they're going to make money and how they're going to gain share and how they're going to, exploit this niche in the market that's left vacant that could be filled. He said, everybody comes to me with plans like that. And I just look the other way. He said, the ones that really get my attention and ultimately the ones that get the money are the ones that put meaning over money. And he kept using that phrase, meaning over money. You know, tell me why you're doing what you're doing. And because I know if that reason is a good reason and you are completely totally bodily into it, that the chances are better that you're going to generate profits than they would be otherwise. And it's become a criteria that he uses when he's deciding, you know, who to fund and who not to fund, which I thought
very
was interesting.
Cool. Yeah, very cool. And that's always good to hear things like that. Now, you talked about Apple, and Apple's an amazing example of that whole purpose behind the company. What are some of the other examples of companies that are using story brands?
When I mention these names, they won't surprise you. Nike, it's a brand about their story is really about athletic performance. You know, sure they start out with the waffle sole, and they've got great, you know, sportswear and what have you, but they've done a very good job of associating themselves with the value of the reason for being in business, and that is to help athletes perform at their very best. Harley Davidson is a brand whose story is about letting your hair down, freedom, independence, nonconformity, rebellion, sure they make great motorcycles, but their ads promote a lifestyle that their brand has become associated with. Disney, Southwest Airlines, Chipotle. I just saw some ads that they're doing about food integrity. I don't know if you've seen the animated version of they have like a 60-second commercial they show every so often during some of the big shows like Academy Awards and that sort of thing, where they show a farmer who has decided that he no longer wants to farm the new way with, you know, injecting hormones into, you know, cattle and plants and whatever, and that he's going to go organic and for good reasons. And, you know, they never in the ad say, and Chipotle is organic and good for you. But by showing this story about this farmer, they associate with the value of food integrity, and ergo, they become a story about food integrity.
Right. And that's cool because, you know, in today's world, I find that the best companies out there, the ones that get the biggest real momentum going with them, are the ones that have something that people want to fight for, essentially.
Exactly.
You know, it's like
a cause.
Yeah, a cause behind what they're doing. I just brought up Infusionsoft. That's one of the things that they're very big into. You and I were talking about the culture behind what they do, and their whole mission is to help entrepreneurs succeed. That's it. You know, I don't work for them, but I know what their mission statement is. You know, there's so many things I see. I see companies that are jumping on more of the their causes could be help the environment, living healthier, helping entrepreneurs succeed. I mean, but there's an actual story and that cause behind it empowers and gives the momentum and the drive, not only for themselves to succeed, but also for other people to get involved and want to be part of that community. And that's
exactly
where I think this just really explodes.
I was talking to an entrepreneur a couple of days ago who is starting it's kind of hard to explain. It's like a health club / wellness center / spa. It's an amazing concept. But we asked her, okay, so what is the value that's driving all of this? And she very quickly looked back to us and said, I think it's really important that people move. Movement is everything. And in that sentence or two, I mean, she crystallized her reason for being. And to everybody in the room, you know, we were pretty excited because not too many people, you know, can do that. It's a hard thing to do. But clearly this person had a vision and had an idea of what her business was going to be about. And, we think that clearly success is for her to take. Never in the conversation did the idea of making money come up. It was in her mind, you know, that'll all come, you know, because I know what I'm doing here, and I know that this is the right thing to do. And, you know, if to the extent I'm able to do it, in the way, the best way possible, is the extent to which I will make money. So I think that is good an example of a startup company and a startup attitude that that epitomizes what we think story branding is really all about.
Very cool. That's an awesome story. I love that. So one of the things you talk about is brand layers. What are those? Let's explain what those are for everybody.
Well, first of all, in story branding, in the book, we outline a process for identifying what your story is. And in effect, we pose the brand as its own story. It's a character in its own story that has certain obstacles and certain goals to achieve by overcoming those obstacles. When we get to defining the brand character, like most characters in stories, they have, the writers, we refer to them as being either flat or rounded. Flat being, superficial, sort of, we know a little bit about them, but the rounded characters are the ones where we really get into their heads and understand what their motivations are. And we've sort of translated that into inner and outer layers. The outer layer is those are the things we see. That's how the product performs. It's how the service performs. It's what it does. It's functional properties, advantages, benefits, all those things that we've been, many of us have been taught make up the subject of all advertising. And what we suggest in the books very strongly is that you don't stop there like many advertisers do, but you go into the inner layer. And the inner layer consists of the values and the beliefs that are motivating the outer layer, the reason for what the outer layer is. And we've talked about some of those values and beliefs that are driving successful brands like Apple, Chipotle, Harley Davidson, etc. But it's not just important to understand what the inner layer is, but it's also important to manifest the inner layer by linking it to the outer layer. You can't say you believe in being different like Apple and then coming up with a product that's no different than anybody else's. You know what I mean? The inner and the outer layer have to link up. They have to be aligned, or else your brand identity is going to create some dissonance. So we look at making sure that whatever we're hearing is the value, the belief that's driving the brand, that in fact it's best demonstrated through the products and services and the way those products and services are being delivered.
Very cool. And it is about, being authentic from, being true to yourself of who you are, what you really stand for, and portraying that message so everybody else hears the same thing. Because I'll tell you what, I can't count the number of times where somebody will say one thing and I can just tell from the vibe that that's not what they really stand for.
Right. And in today's world, with social media and forums and reviews and sharing of information about various products and services, brands are highly, highly transparent. So, if your inner layer and your outer layer are not aligned, you're going to get found out a lot faster than you would have, say, 10 years ago. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So one of the things about in the book, you say some not so nice things about what we call the USP, your unique selling proposition. That's what so many people, both marketing and advertising, they really push the whole USP process. I teach it as well. So what's wrong with it? Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Well, first of all, there's nothing wrong with it, but it alone isn't going to work very long for you. What you have that's unique today is probably not going to be unique tomorrow, especially today with innovation being as fast as it is. I can name off a lot of different brands that, built their whole brand around their USP, i.e. Domino's, the 30-minute guarantee. Do you remember this?
Yes.
And who doesn't offer a 30-minute guarantee today, right? But that was their whole brand. Burger King, we do it like you do. Well, go into McDonald's and see if you can have a hamburger without a pickle, these innovations, these ideas that make brands and products unique today, I think got to know what that is, okay? And you've got to work hard to define that. But don't be short-sighted. Don't think that's all you need to do, because you need to go beyond the USP to what we call the UVP, the unique value proposition, which has long-term implications. The unique value proposition, again, goes back to the inner layer, which is the belief, the values associated with the brand, and the emotional connection that you're going to make by associating yourself with certain things that resonate with other people, certain beliefs that resonate with your customers. Those are, regardless of what your unique selling proposition is today or tomorrow or next year, your UVP is permanent. And it is going to withstand the demands of time. USPs, when they were first introduced by Rosser Reeves back in the 50s, you know, it was a real big concept, you know. But there weren't that many new products coming on the line. What, 3 TV networks? Advertising was too expensive for most to do. You didn't really have to think long term as much as you do today, because what you have, I mean, think about computers and how in the 90s, how it was like, what, the 386, the 486, the Pentium, the, I don't even know where it went after that or what it is today, but it's version 1, version 2, version 3 of software. It's constantly changing. So you have to think that what you have today is temporary. It's just a given.
Right, and it's all about the value you provide. It's not necessarily just the product. You know, most of it isn't the product. You know, it amazes me how many times I'll see people, and as an example, we'll use, network marketing people. And I have nothing against network marketing. There's some great companies out there, but it amazes me how 2 or 3 people can all be in the same room selling the exact same product, yet one person can do phenomenal and get clients. They can get people that come in that are interested in becoming part of their downline, and then you get these other guys that can't make it and they can't figure out why. It's because of the extra value they're providing from that one person going out of their way, extra training, the extra hands-on support, the customer service from a standpoint of just being there to help people. Those are the values that people actually really have more respect for.
And again, those are inner layer kinds of things. You can't tell somebody, I care more than the next guy. Mm-hmm. It has to be demonstrated.
Right.
Those are things that have to be communicated through what you do and not through what you say. I would argue that the person that you're referring to that's more successful than the other guy who has the same product is communicating some belief that he has about service that is resonating with his customers better than anybody else. And it's through what he's doing as opposed to, what he has.
Right. And that's, another story that I'm sure you'll find entertaining on this. I was talking to a acupuncturist one time, and we were talking about ways that we could work with her, and she was fairly new. She got into business, and I guess here in the Valley, for the type of certification and the training and stuff she's had, there's only 100 people in the entire Valley that can do what she does. I'm like, okay, so what is it that makes you stand out that's different? And she's like, well, I care about my customers. I care about my clients. And I'm like, okay, so are you going to tell me that the other 99 guys can't say that? Well, I'm not sure. I'm like, well, let's really look at this. You are an acupuncturist, which means you're using me as a human dartboard. I would hope you care. And she was like, oh, I'm like, yeah, the other 99 guys are saying the exact same thing, because if they didn't, I would be very, very scared.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's one of those, so oftentimes we get into meetings and say, well, what makes you different? And we get things like that. Oh, we care more. We have better service. We have more quality. We have, stuff like that. And you're right. I mean, a lot of people can say the same thing. But again, how do you demonstrate that? That's the question. You take a company like Zappos. Are you familiar with Zappos and their service?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Amazing company. And I would recommend anybody go to Henderson and take their culture tour. It'll blow your mind. These people are the epitome of great service. You order something from them, they send you a hand thank you note that the person that you talked to on the phone the other day calls and makes sure you got your order on, and you can return the order if you don't like it, and everything will be fine, and nobody's going to charge you. Or they just go out of their way to make sure that you are more than satisfied. And it is, they live it and they breathe it. And all it takes is an interaction with one of their people to get how much they care. They never tell you we care more. They never say it, but boy, do they prove it. And that's really what it's all about, I think.
Yeah. And it's an amazing experience. I haven't actually had a chance to get up there and go to the tour yet, but I do have plans. One of the guys that I actually work with, Joe Polish, I'm part of one of his masterminds, and he's like, oh yeah, anytime you want to go up there, let me know, because if Tony's there, I'll make sure I get you on the VIP list so you can hang out with him. I'm like, okay, sounds like a plan. So
yeah.
I've got that one. That one's on my list. Just haven't made it up there yet. All right, so one of the other things that you talk about is achieving a level 4 connection. Explain what that is and what does that work with as far as entrepreneurs go?
Well, you know, and maybe this is an oversimplification, but it's oversimplification to make the point that there really are 4 levels of connection with a prospect. There's number 1, the lowest level is awareness. It's getting them just to, you know, remember who you are. And the second level, once you've achieved awareness, the second level is to get to comprehension, you know, to understand what you're all about, to understand your advantages and benefits, okay? So thus far, we've just covered the rational connection, you know, what your name is and what do you do. Then we get into more of the emotional side. The third connect level is confidence. That's when your brand actually gets in the consumer's consideration set. Okay, there's 3 brands that I would choose, you know, Harley, Yamaha, and Honda, okay, because I'm confident in those brands. There's something about them that I believe is probably, you know, trustable. And the fourth level, and it's the hardest level to achieve, level 4, is affinity. And that's when, you know, you not only buy the Harley, but you put the Harley logo tattoo on your arm. You know, you just love Harley Davidson. You love Apple. You love Southwest Airlines. And we often tell our clients, you know, if they're interested in finding the extent to which they've achieved level 4, is to go to Google and put in and use the Google, what we call the Google Love Test. Put in quotation marks, I love, name the brand, and quotation marks, and it'll tell you how many clicks there are or how many people have actually said, I love your brand, on the Google pages. And it's very interesting. You could do that for any brand and see how the level of affinity that any brand's achieved relative to its competition. But that is the ultimate goal. And with that said, what we also believe as a result of this is that sales should not be the ultimate goal. Affinity should be the ultimate goal, because sales will come the extent to which affinity exists. Because what a lot of people don't think about is that once you have a brand lover, you have a brand, you have an advertising vehicle who's out there doing your work for you, who's telling the world how great your brand is, by either wearing your logo, by either directly talking about it, by commenting about it on the internet, what have you. So the better goal to go for is affinity. Get the brand lovers, and the rest will fall into place.
Awesome, and that is so true. It's amazing how much power you get when you start building that kind of community behind it, where people just, I mean, it's building your raving fans. That's what it really boils down to.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So one of the other things you talk about is you refer to the archetypal analysis of mm-hmm. brand stories. What is that? Because I've just briefly started hearing more about archetypes. And so I'm actually reading a book on it right now. And I find it interesting that literally not too long after I started the book is when you and I connected. So let's talk about archetypes more.
Well, I should, before I tell you this, I should offer a disclaimer and tell you that this is something that you probably should be advised on, as opposed to trying to do it yourself. But archetypal analysis, there's a psychologist by the name of Carl Jung, who was actually was a competitor of Freud, and they both were both good friends and colleagues. And Freud got the idea that everything's related to sex, and Jung got the idea that everything's related to archetypes. Never the twain met again; they went their own separate ways. But Jung believed that we are predisposed to behaving in certain ways according to some standard, what he calls archetypes, story, character, behaviors, i.e., there's the conqueror, for instance. This is the person who does whatever it takes to win. There's the healer or the caregiver, the person whose life purpose is to take care of other people. And, you know, there's a little bit of every archetype, or not every archetype, but there's a little bit of certain archetypes in every one of us that comes to the fore depending on the given situation. There was this psychologist by the name of Carol Pearson who wrote a book called, Hero and...
Hero and the Outlaw?
Yeah, that's it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Hero and the Outlaw. And in that book, she defines 12 archetypes that define brands. And she's done a lot of studies on these, and whereas I'm not sure it's the complete study on archetypes, it's a pretty damn good one, a good starting point. And we use these, we use our own version of these with our clients, and not for the purpose of finding out, you know, which archetype they belong to. Are you the rebel? Are you the jester? Are you the caregiver? Are you the lover? Whatever, you know, we put those out in front of our clients to help them to articulate what their values are. You know, a lot of the clients that we work with are very logical, sequential. You know, their life is a balance sheet and or a spreadsheet. You know, they're always into numbers, and they're not used to using the language that we need them to use in order to describe what their real value is. So what we do is we say, okay, tell us which one of these characters most, you can, as a brand, you can most relate to, and tell us why. And we're able to extract from those conversations some rich information that helps us to better understand, you know, where they are. Whereas Carol Pearson prescribes that you land on one and only one archetype. You are either a rebel or a maverick, or you're a discoverer, okay, or explorer. And I think that's the ideal, you know, if you could land on one, but more often than not, we think it's impractical, and you really are a blend of a number of different characters. And the idea is to use this as a stepping stone to defining the unique value proposition. It's just a stimulus, if you will, that helps us to extract information that we need. What do they call these techniques? Indirect. It's like an indirect research technique that we use. And it's very interesting, the different types of discussions that we'll find ourselves in as a result, where this half of the room thinks we're one character and the other half thinks, no, we're this character. And, oh, we discovered there's a conflict in the organization. So, you know, we have to go deep into the organization and understand how we can remedy that conflict. Now, I will tell you that we have more of that being the situation with corporate marketers than we do with entrepreneurs. Because when we're sitting around the room with entrepreneurs, they're pretty clear on what the direction is more often than not, because the owner has set the pace and said, this is what we're about, when he started the business and when he got it to be where it is. So it's not as difficult to get to the UVP with that entrepreneurial group as it is with corporate marketers.
Right. Well, and it's, you know, when you get into the corporate side of things, you end up getting too many chiefs and too many ideas, and that definitely makes a world of difference.
Right. Or they'll say, well, let's go ask the customer. And that's exactly what we don't want to do, because we don't want to know what the customer thinks. We want to know what you think before we know what the customer thinks.
Right.
You know?
Cool. So do me a favor, give me a couple of real life examples of how you've transformed some businesses into a story brand.
Well, there's this restaurant chain that we work with that your listeners may or may not be familiar with because it's a regional chain. It's called Cozy, COSI. And they are largely in New York and Philadelphia, Boston, East Coast. There are some in the Midwest, here in Chicago and other places. And when we started working with them, their theme line was simply good taste. And we basically said, well, couldn't anybody say that? I mean, what, that's outer layer stuff. And furthermore, it's your opinion. What do you stand for? What are you really all about? And what we discovered is, by the way, they are a competitor of Panera. That's a much more familiar chain, but they're in the fast casual category.
Okay,
And
I know Panera.
if you compare Cozy to Panera or anybody else, you'll quickly see that their menu is largely made up of sandwiches that are international, French, Italian, Asian, what have you. We went out, and what we found out from them was that they're big on exploring new tastes and textures. That's, they're really dedicated to that. And it happened that, when we talked to their brand lovers and their customers, we found out that that was exactly the reason why they were going to Cozy, because Cozy, was part of their interest in new taste and texture. So, gee, there's a match made in heaven. So we decided to, change their theme line, or we recommended that they change their theme line. They decided to, from simply good taste to life should be delicious, which is more of a mantra, which is more of a statement of belief. It's what they're all about. It really aligned very well with their outer layer, their sandwiches from different countries, and their new variety of that they were always introducing throughout the year. It worked very, very well. It really came out of what they're about, it encapsulated, or rather embraced their entire culture. From the HR, they coming out of this idea knew exactly the kind of people that they needed to hire, people who could extend the idea of discovery and how life should be delicious. All the way through the management circles within the organization. It helped them to define the type of person that best fits their culture, and helped them to define their brand to their consumers in a way that they felt very strongly about, and want in a way that they could fully support authentically.
Cool.
So
Well, that's a
there was another
very
one.
good
There was
one.
a
Oh, go ahead.
there if you want another example, there was a casino that we worked for. And when we went to them, they said, "Well, okay, so what do you stand for?" And he said, "Well, we're the hip, cool, sexy casino where all the beautiful people hang out, and that's what we want to be known for." And we looked at their advertising. And their advertising said, basically it said we're hip and cool and sexy. It said, "Catch the vibe. We're happening. Are you?" It basically just came right out and said, "We're cool." And we said, "Look, cool people don't tell you they're cool."
Right.
It's an inner value. It has to be shown. And what we came to them with was advertising. This happened to be in Detroit, and it happened to be a local casino, and we came up with a graphic approach that showed hot rod flames and all kinds of different configurations and cool designs, synonymous with Detroit, which is all about cars. And we had some, I guess we hired the Ohio Players, who came up with the song Fire as background music, and we created commercials that were all visual, no words. They were scenes from their Ultra Bar, of, you know, really cool people dancing, and you know, there were scenes from people pulling into their parking lot in these amazing cars, and they were, you know, just vignettes, life vignettes of, you know, cool people. And it was aspirational. It was, but they really, you know, it was the kind of person that they wanted their customer to see themselves as. But we didn't tell them we were cool. We showed them. And whether they think they're cool or not, I mean, that was the assignment. And we took their inner value and we communicated in a way that was more indirect than direct, which is a function of story branding.
Very cool. Awesome stories. And that shows, I mean, these are things, just because those are bigger companies, anybody can do this. It's a matter of getting your message together and building, you know, building a story around where your real passion is, where your real mission is behind what you do. That's what.
And the challenge, however, the biggest challenge is defining why. Why are you doing what you're doing? And I would suggest to any entrepreneur that before they do anything, they come to grips with that. Because the rest is easy, I think. I mean, I shouldn't say easy. It's never easy, but it's easier. It's easier to work with that kind of a direction than it is with a direction that we have to go out and, you know, increase our sales by 20% this year.
Right. No, definitely. And the great thing about it is that once you've got that down, it amazes me how many opportunities just show up. You know, it goes along with, you know, you've probably heard the term the reticular activator. You know, basically every time when you buy a new car, all of a sudden you realize there's 1,000 of the same color of car that you just bought that showed up.
Right. I've never heard that term, but that's exactly right.
Yeah, it's called the reticular activator. And basically what it is it's something, it's because your brain is now aware of it. So it's subconsciously searching for this thing. So, you know, as an example, we bought a PT Cruiser, and it was so funny because I had never really paid too much attention to him before because I didn't really care so much. And Cindy went through, she decided that she wanted to have this car, so we got this car. And all of a sudden, and of course, oh, by the way, it was the cream white looking one. And all of a sudden, as soon as we have this, she's like, I had a hard time finding my car because I didn't realize how many PT Cruisers are out there. And she's seeing them everywhere. I mean, she's like, I can swear that today I saw 100 of them around the road and in the parking lots and everything. I'm like, yeah, they've all been there, but it's not until you have it and it's front of mind awareness, essentially, that it starts showing up. And you have that same thing happen once you've got that clear vision of exactly what it is you're after and where your message really lies. It's amazing what opportunities that were probably sitting right there in front of you before you didn't realize were there, they all of a sudden come forefront and it just skyrockets what you're doing.
Exactly. That's right. It really does. It becomes a stimulus for other ideas. And the other ideas are a lot easier to come up with because, you know, the big idea has been defined.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, thank you very much, Jim. Let's go ahead and kind of recap. If there's one thing that people can get out there and do, take action on right away, what would that one thing be?
Well, it goes back to, I guess, the theme of all we talked about here. And I'd say in one sentence, explain your primary motivation behind wanting to be an entrepreneur and doing what you're doing as an entrepreneur. If you're saying it's to make lots of money or to gain freedom or to be your own boss, you should know that's not the answer we're looking for. You know, we're looking for a purpose that you want to share with others. What is that? And you only get one sentence to write it.
Very cool.
That should keep people busy.
Yeah, and that's about as direct as you can get. And I'll tell you what, everybody listening to this program, do that. That one thing. And it's going to be a lot harder than you think. But when you do it, it's so, so worth it. All right, Jim. Yep. So thank you so much for joining us today. Real quick, let's go ahead and recap. How can people get the book?
Oh, this is time for the shameless plug. Is that it?
That's what it would be.
Okay. The book is Story Branding, Creating Standout Brands Through the Power of Story. And it's available in most bookstores. And online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, a lot of the independent books, online bookstores. Or you can order direct from our website, actually my blog, which is Storyati, Storyati, .com. Just go to the tab that says buy the book. Actually, you can download an excerpt if you like before you order the book. And you can purchase it directly through that site.
Awesome. All right, Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks, Eli.
It was definitely fun. And if there's anything that we can do for you, always just let us know.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey there, this is Eli again, and I got a question for you. Do you have a roadmap for marketing your business? If you're consistently looking for new marketing ideas just to keep your business going, then you need to check out smallbusinessmarketingroadmap.com and download the free special report that I created to help you create a marketing plan that will thrive in any economy. Again, that's smallbusinessmarketingroadmap.com. Go get it, read it, and start the road trip of your lifetime. See you on the other side.